You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, Colton Molesky, and I'm joined today by Darius Retzer, a.k.a. Judge Fudge, and Dane Moore calling in off the road on the way back from Milwaukee. He's risking life and limb to call in to the show today.
Well, I'm not off the road. I'm on it. I'm driving.
Soon to be off the road.
Hopefully not. We don't want to cause any accidents here at Locked On Wolves. But we had to have people call in and come into the studio because we've had a week of basketball transpire. I've been out of town, so we had a couple shows go up that I planned earlier in the week last week, but I've been out of town for the most part all week, and we've had a lot of basketball go down for the Timberwolves, a lot of really exciting basketball and topic-filled basketball to talk about over the last week to go over. So we're going to hit on some stuff quickly and try and go over as much as we can. First of all, gentlemen, I wanted to hit on the Christmas Day game just because we previewed it pretty thoroughly, didn't really cover it afterwards. Any thoughts from the Timberwolves win on the road in LA? It was a pretty significant win, 121-104, despite Kyle Kuzma's 31 points. What did you guys think of this one?
Want me to take that, Darius? I can. I think the story of that game was the announcers. That was it wasn't a particularly enticing basketball game from the perspective that the Lakers were without Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram, but it was the first time we kind of had the chance to have this team, the Timberwolves team, be berated on national television. Chuck, Kenny, and Shaq were not kind to the Minnesota Timberwolves. They recognized that the Wolves were a team with a good record, but I think 10 times they said that this Timberwolves team doesn't scare anybody. And a lot of that was due to the way in which the Timberwolves play, which we know is slower. And they pointed out a lot how late in the shot clock Timberwolves shots are going off, and it's this kind of gross brand of basketball that that the Wolves have been playing. And what the connection I made to it was that what Chuck and Kenny were mostly saying, it wasn't smart. They don't know what analytics are. They don't they had some terrible takes on 3-point shooting. But but what was interesting was the fact that there has been this underlying tone with this Timberwolves team from the fan perspective that something about it is hard to latch onto. It's not really gripping to watch. The stylistically, it's a bit grating the way they drag out possessions. And I mean, outside of Jimmy Butler heroics, which we'll get to, really like 80% of Timberwolves games are very frustrating from a fan standpoint. And I'm sure you guys are kind of feeling the same thing when you got your friends, you know, texting you and stuff while games are going. They're just pissed off about this team. And
especially Pride.
Tom Thibodeau basketball, though. I don't think people understand that.
Yeah, that's the issue. Is that a strategy to kind of grind out possessions offensively and kind of slow down the pace of the game. So Chuck and Kenny aren't wrong in saying that maybe the Wolves should be playing with a little bit more pace, but obviously the thing we got to loop back to is the fact that this is working, and maybe the schedule at the beginning of the season hasn't been that hard, but we're still talking about the fifth best offense in the NBA according to, you know, net rating. And so to some extent it's working, and that's because this slow isolation style of basketball might not be exciting to watch or the most efficient way to play, but with exceptional isolation scorers, it is working, and the offense is finding ways to score in a way that's very counter to, of course, the way the Golden State Warriors and Rockets play. But really the parallel I've been making, which was another one of the Christmas Day games, is the Cleveland Cavaliers. And that's very isolation-centric, particularly the way Cleveland was with Kyrie, too. You know, a little bit of baton passing from LeBron to Kyrie and Kevin Love. And we're kind of seeing that now in Minnesota between Wiggins to Butler to Towns to Teague. It's not pretty. It's kind of like your turn. But again, much like the Cavaliers, who have had a very good offense for years, so too do the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Yeah, and the other thing too is, I think it's nice to have a team that's fairly young that's not going to get swept up in the pace of a game when you're playing a team that wants to speed up the tempo of the offense. There's any takeaways from this game just as far as maybe Jimmy Butler extending his dominance in December, or that you had a pretty solid night from guys like Teague and Towns across the board? You had a couple guys put up 20-point games outside of Butler. What was just a takeaway you had from the Lakers game before we move on to maybe some of the more exciting games of the week?
Not a huge analytical take here, but it seemed like for the first time in a while, and especially now looking at the other two games we've had this week, they were consistent start to finish, and I think they might have even improved towards the end of the game. They didn't give up a huge lead. They didn't do any of that. They played good, consistent basketball. There were no stupid turnovers in the fourth quarter, and I know it's not a good Lakers team, especially with Ingram and Lonzo out, but just to finally see some consistency with just play throughout the entire game. It felt really nice. And on the national stage, I wasn't a fan of the commentators. I won't go into that, but yeah, no, it was a good game. They played well throughout.
Finished the game 38-24 in the fourth quarter. You're right. They did finish really strong. They started out really well and finished strong. That kind of leads into the second game and really the rest of the week for the Timberwolves. You have them playing Denver, where they won in overtime, 128-125. I don't want to talk about this the entire time because there's a lot that happened this game, but this was the Jimmy Butler show, right, guys? I mean, Dane, how does Jimmy Butler not go to an All-Star game after the phenomenal December month that he's put together?
Oh, yeah, I feel like he locked that up, which is high praise in the Western Conference for sure. And, I mean, kind of putting that on top of what he did at the beginning of the season, which is much lower scoring. He was kind of letting Wiggins and Towns at the beginning of the year kind of handle the offensive load, and now he's begun to assert himself, and he's begun to do so very well at an elite level, and particularly at the highest leverage situations at the end of the game. I mean, it's amazing. His ability to put the team on his back, as the saying goes, it's one of the very few players in the NBA can do it. And I guess the bigger takeaway outside of the lauding of Butler that is interesting is why did Jimmy Butler take such a backseat at the beginning of the season now why has he upped his usage so immensely? And was that a plan? I don't know. Was it a plan at the beginning of the year to say, all right, I'm going to kind of slowly squeak my way in here and then kind of pick it up? Or did he just get fed up with Wiggins and Towns? And did he just say, you know what, I'm sick of the way a lot of this is going down. I'm gonna pick this up. I'm gonna put it on my back. I'm gonna rely on the players I rely on, because I don't even think it's only Butler picking it up. He's very much dominated the ball, and he clearly has eyes for Taj Gibson and Jamal Crawford in a way that he doesn't for Towns and Wiggins. And obviously, Towns and Wiggins are still getting theirs to some extent, but Butler, it's very clear to me that when things go haywire, his preferred option is to drop the ball off to Taj and or Jamal Crawford. And that's interesting, considering that those are inferior players. Now, Gibson has played great. Particularly, Gibson has played phenomenal of late. I think he might be playing his best basketball of his career.
I'd agree with that, but you still want to get it to a guy like Wiggins and Towns. You want to see those guys getting incorporated, the youth of the basketball team getting incorporated in. An interesting note I noticed I had about both these games was Wiggins, he's been going through this slump, but you've seen his three-point shooting increase over these last two against the Denver Nuggets. He had 8 three-point attempts against the Milwaukee Bucks. He had 6. That really made this offense look a little bit better just as a whole, and it made him look a lot better when he's getting more attempts, and he just looked like he was feeling a little more fluid on the offensive side late in the game. Darius, is this maybe the key, is just giving him 7 to 8 shots on the three-point line going forward if Butler is going to continue to do these offensive kind of heroics late in game?
I think you've got to increase just the shot load from beyond the arc that Wiggins is going to take. He's never going to break a slump. He's never going to be more efficient if he's taking one, two, three shots a game, which he was a lot in the first half of the season. And just seeing, I think it was against the Denver game, he hit his first three or four. So, like, he was hot off the start. Keep feeding that. If he starts hitting the three ball, it just opens up so much else in this offense. And I think that's going to be a huge key. Not only him, Kat's been getting a lot better in the three ball. Just if we can start shooting the three ball better, everything's going to open up a lot more.
And
it totally does for him. I mean, it's the externalities of that are huge. If he's hitting a couple threes at the beginning of the game, the way he's defended is different. I remember specifically in that Denver game, Wiggins was 4 for 4 from three, and he hit his fourth three of the game, and the next possession he comes down and Wilson Chandler closes out super hard on him, runs him completely off the line, and Wiggins penetrates all the way into the basket. He doesn't pull up from 16 feet. He works his way into the bucket and finds Jimmy Butler for a three that he got fouled on. And it's just when he's shooting those threes, he's guarded differently, and that totally shifts the whole flow of the Timberwolves offense.
So now the real question is, and I want to phrase this carefully because I'm a Teague guy, I'm a Teague supporter. Is this team, the way that they're set up right now with Wiggins finding that stroke early and them intentionally feeding the ball to Wiggins more on the outside of the three-point arc, are they going to be okay without some offensive production from Teague? Because he's not always consistently really good on offense, but he will have those games from time to time where he puts up 18 to 20, 22 points. But when he's out with his absence over this month, are they going to be able to produce the same amount of offense if they have this formula down of Wiggins shooting more from the outside and finding a stroke early? Dan, you go first, and then Darius, you hit that.
Well, I think Jeff Teague helps the offense. I think when the ball is in his hands, that's a good starting point of the offense. He's never going to be the guy leading the team in shots, of course, but that's helpful. And I think without him, it's not that Tyus Jones is bad. He's a fine option. He's a very good backup point guard. But the issue we saw in Milwaukee last night is, without Tyus Jones, there's not a backup lead ball handler. Crawford and Aaron Brooks showed last night that they really are not the option there. So then it becomes additional ball handling duty for Jimmy Butler, and we already know Jimmy Butler is being used very, very much on both ends of the floor. So are they going to lose a ton with Jeff Teague? I think so, not because of Tyus Jones, but because it takes away from Butler. To your point with Wiggins, I mean, yeah, it probably helps Wiggins' shot volume go up, but as a whole, I think it's a big loss to be without Teague. Again, not because of the drop-off to Tyus, but because what is behind Tyus, and the point guard is just such an important position in the NBA, having a point guard who can score. I mean, we know for years with Rubio at the helm, that's an issue. And there's not shooters, there's not ball handlers. It's just Tyus Jones and Jimmy Butler. So without Teague, the team's gonna be hurting, even if Wiggins is marginally benefiting.
Well, and by no means am I saying that they are better off without Teague, but there is this might be the formula for them surviving without their starting point guard. Darius, what did you think of Wiggins' production over the last couple of games and what that maybe means for the future of how he plays, specifically just right away in January?
I'm hoping it means straight off the bat he's taking more three balls, he's getting more confident in his shot. The only thing we don't know is why is he hitting more now? What's the difference between now and a few games ago when he wasn't taking as many three shots? I'm starting to wonder, is Wiggins a big confidence guy? Is he the guy that needs to knock down those shots early to, you know, really be productive the rest of the game? Does he get gun-shy if he's got a couple ratting them out right away? I don't know, but I think the formula needs to be for a while, kind of seeing, does this work? Does getting Wiggins, you know, three balls, you know, in the first 5 minutes get him going for the rest of the game? If there's a way they can find to jumpstart him as opposed to, you know, maybe dishing him the ball more in the third quarter and seeing if that works, if there's a way to jumpstart him in the first 5 minutes, they got to figure out how to do that. And I think that this might be the only method we have right now, is letting him shoot threes right away.
Well, and I think Wiggins he's never going to be, or at least not for the near future, he's never going to be one of those guys that just is going to flip on and you flip the switch and he's just on for that quarter. I think Butler's that guy. I don't think Wiggins is that guy scoring-wise. I think he's one of those guys where he needs to slowly kind of get revved up throughout the course of a game and really light it up and needs the opportunity to have plenty of shots before he is really starting to feel hot and really finds his stroke. It will be interesting to see without Teague going forward because he's going to be out about a month now is what they do with him just as far as those extra shots that have all of a sudden popped up. Do they give a majority of those to Wiggins to try and see him heat up more quickly in games, or do they try and distribute those more to like a Jones you saw in the Milwaukee game? Aaron Brooks was contributing a fair amount definitely early on. He finished with 3 minutes, but early on, they had him playing some possessions and getting the ball moving around a little bit. So we'll see how that works out. Quickly, I wanted to hit on the Milwaukee game before we really dive into the comebacks and the leads that evaporated for the Timberwolves. Outside of that big fact, what were some of the takeaways from the Milwaukee game for you, Dane?
Well, I was at the game. I was covering the game, and it just trickled away. It got up to 20 points, and talking to Taj Gibson in the locker room afterwards, he was just like, we needed to step on their necks. We needed to kill that game and put it away. And playing on the road, once the Bucks started getting a couple easy buckets and the Wolves slowed down, the crowd got into it. It was very loud. Gibson was saying he couldn't even hear the guy next to him in the stadium. And playing on the road, playing a little tired, things can break for this Timberwolves team. They're not like a fluid machine, and we see in those lapses. It's the mental lapses is what Butler was saying after the game. Is we have these mental lapses where we get scared that the lead is going to go away, and oh my God, blowing a 20-point lead, and then that comes out in the way in which they played, and after getting buckets so easily in the first half. I mean, the Wolves were dominating. It just became completely stagnant. I mean, there was four straight minutes where the Wolves didn't score. They had 12 total fourth quarter points. It's unfortunate that the Wolves just have this ability to slow down so much. And you would think a 20-point lead was safe, but I guess also when you factor in fatigue and then a couple other guys are getting injured. Tyus dislocated his finger. Wiggins rolled his ankle. It was able to fall apart. But a lot of it I want to attribute to a back-to-back, and Milwaukee's not a bad team, too. So I don't think it's the end of the world.
Especially a back-to-back after an OT game. Before we keep kind of diving into the evaporated leads here, Darius, just reactions to Giannis. I mentioned I was watching with my dad and my grandpa, again, over Christmas break, went up north to hang out with the family, as most people do, so was watching with them. And something that everybody in the living room noticed in the Milwaukee game, basically after the first quarter, anytime Giannis wanted to score driving down the lane, he was just going to get the bucket, and there was nothing anybody was going to do about it. What was your impression of kind of him and Bledsoe both taking over the game?
Giannis exerted his will on the Wolves. After the first quarter, I remember one where he just Euro-stepped Jimmy Butler. Jimmy was, did you see that one? He was setting up to take the charge.
He goes did it right, like three times and nobody, I know, there was just no answer.
There was no answer. He'd Euro-step him. He'd just drive to the lane. It was hard to watch. No one, it was frustrating, man.
Yeah, that.
He's just slippery. He's slippery, but he's powerful. It's like, it's this ability to kind of slither his way to the basket, but also finish so strong. I mean, we know Giannis is just an exceptional player, but there needs to be adjustments made, and they just weren't. The Wolves ran out of gas, and they had no answer for him. I mean, again, Butler looked very physically fatigued, and his needing to carry the offensive load, and then guard Giannis, like that's just so much to ask.
There's not a lot of guys that are that big that you can describe as slippery. That's for sure.
Well, that's the problem too, is that if you put Towns on him, he's gonna outmuscle Towns, but Taj Gibson just isn't going to be able to keep up with him. And so there wasn't really an answer that they had defensively for him. And if you double him, then Bledsoe was more often than not getting free to score, especially late when he drilled that three to take the lead. It was kind of one of the statement moments of, yeah, go ahead and put two guys on Giannis, and Bledsoe's gonna burn you in the corner, apparently, this game. So it was just a tough game. Again, there's a lot of fatigue there, I think. We're going to dive into both these games a little bit more after a quick break, because I wanted to talk about my favorite fantasy app. Fantasy sports fans, listen up. Did you know that your chances of winning on Draft are 80% better than on the salary cap sites? That's why Draft is my favorite fantasy site. No more getting crushed by the pros. And it's not just me. More than 1 million people that have already downloaded Draft are on there too to play against. Play in a real live NBA Draft right now. Get done in under 5 minutes and get paid out the next day. Drafts are filling every second, so you can join one whenever you want. All new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit, but you have to use my promo code LOTWOLVES. That's LOTWOLVES. That's right. Play in a real money draft for free just by using my promo code LOTWOLVES. But it gets even better. Draft is so sure you'll love it that they're even offering listeners a money-back guarantee of up to $100. Just search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and come play free right now with the promo code LOTWOLVES. All right, so two leads evaporated going into, you had Milwaukee and then the Denver Nuggets. It was 19 and 20 points, and both of those evaporated really quickly. So what do you do when you're a fan and you're looking at this? You kind of overblow what happened in this game, and you make more of it, I think, than what needs to be made of it. I was looking at some stats in the fourth quarter. The Timberwolves defense, not great in the fourth quarter of December. Defensive rating was 111 over the month, and over the last two games, 133.6 in defensive rating, and points that they averaged in the fourth quarter. They averaged 12 points in the fourth quarter of the last two games, but 25 in the fourth quarter over December. I think this is more just, you had the game where Denver, you had two guys fall out in Towns and Taj Gibson, and then Teague left with an injury, and then they played on a back-to-back on the road after an overtime game. I think this is not the standard so much as just special circumstance. Dane, what did you think of the two leads that evaporated really quickly on the Wolves? One, they were able to get a win. One, they weren't so fortunate.
Well, I think what's important to point out is that broadly, season long, the Wolves have been good at sustaining their leads. In entering the game in Milwaukee, when the Wolves get a 10-point lead this season, they're 13-3. And that's comparatively to the rest of the league, like a 10-point lead isn't that big, particularly in today's NBA. So they have been holding on to leads. You know, that was very much an issue in past seasons with the Timberwolves. They have the talent to sustain these leads and win the games, and they have been. But I more so attribute the lead being blown last night to injuries and fatigue. So I don't think it's necessarily like a systemic issue. In the fourth quarters, the Wolves had been very impressed. I mean, obviously in that Jimmy Butler run, but even before that a bit, there was a chunk of time, I think entering Christmas, where the Wolves' offensive rating was 121 in fourth quarters, and that's dominant. It's really they've been a dominant offensive team in the fourth quarter, but if that offense slips up, if they're tired, if someone's injured, as we know, the defense isn't there, so it allows teams to get back in the game. But, you know, with substantial rest and, I mean, hopefully some of these bench guys start playing more, that's not going to be an issue. The Wolves don't strike me as a team that's going to be choking away many more games other than this Milwaukee one.
Yeah, and just as far as what they do in the fourth quarter as well, if you're looking at the Denver game, I know it's easy to say, oh, they blew the 19-point lead and now they had to take it to overtime. But I thought that was such an impressive and statement win to have so much adversity go down in that game. You have players fouling out, key players fouling out. You have your starting point guard sustain a pretty horrific-looking knee injury. Fortunately, it doesn't sound like he tore anything, but just real time, it looked pretty terrible the way his knee bent, and you're still able to rally together and beat a solid Denver Nuggets team in overtime. I thought that was a really solid statement win for the Timberwolves. And just as far as the Bucks game, just I think the perfect storm of stuff, and they still were able to look really solid on the road in the first half. Darius, what do you take away from this game? Is it more these couple games? Is it more just that Jimmy Butler is going to continue to be dominant even if Teague's off the floor, and so they don't have to worry as much as maybe you would think they do?
That's my number one takeaway. I think as a Timberwolves fan, for the first time in a long time, we get to say we've got a guy that's going to hit big-time shots consistently at the end of games. That's something we haven't seen in a long time. When you say big-time shots, a lot of times people think of a time, you know, Wiggins hit a half-court buzzer beater, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about end of last 5 minutes of the game consistently making those threes, driving to the basket, being the guy that's going to consistently hit the end-of-the-game shots, and that's something we haven't seen, and that's something I think we're finally starting to see. Jimmy Buckets, he did it in Chicago, and now he's gotten more comfortable. As we talked about earlier, he's really, really settling in here, and now he's going to be that guy. It's going to be a pleasure to watch, and it's going to be hitting just clutch baskets, and I'm so excited to continue to watch that.
Well, and Butler, too, with 11 of the 14 points in the overtime against Denver, just incredibly impressive. Now, kind of looking a little bit ahead to Sunday's game against the Pacers, even without Teague, and it just seems like we can't get both of these teams healthy when they play each other fully healthy, but even without Teague, Dane, this is going to be a great matchup, and I think this should be a down-to-the-wire game for Jimmy Butler versus Victor Oladipo.
Yeah, no, I think so, and Darius, kind of going what you're going off of what you said, is it is great to have Jimmy Butler, and he's an ace in the hole in those clutch situations. But what I wonder is there an over-reliance there? Are we too dependent on Jimmy Butler at the end of games? Because at some point, when the game is on the line, or if that happens in the Indiana game, you know, that Jimmy Butler is going to be the player they're going to go to take away. And the question I have is, how much confidence, how much willingness does Butler have to take the ball out of his hands at the end of the game and not be that guy who scores the 11 out of 14 points? We saw him drop it off to Jamal Crawford in that Denver win, and that was a nice play. But I'm kind of the mindset, and I know that the fourth quarter kind of dictates different basketball, but you want to run your offense. You don't want anyone to be off limits. Otherwise, the defense can adjust to that. So I love seeing what Jimmy Butler is doing, but I would also like to see, you know, mixing in the other great offensive talents that the Wolves have, are those other isolators like Wiggins and Towns and Crawford. How many times in those late end of game situations have we seen Butler say, okay, I'm going to stop here and look to find Towns on the block? Because that's also a very dominant position that the Wolves have, an asset that they can use at the end of those games. And particularly with Towns, Butler he seems to, and I kind of said this earlier, take his eye off of him, and he's more focused on himself, and it's working. But it can work even better if a couple of those other guys are also used in those clutch situations. And to the Indiana game, yeah, Victor Oladipo is one of the most impressive stories of the year. I'm of the mindset, though, that they're still the Indiana Pacers. They don't have the amount of talent that the Timberwolves do. Sure, it's a road game, but that's a game, in my opinion, that the Wolves should win, even on the road. That's if you're the better team, they're going to have had 2 days rest going into that. That should be a win for the Timberwolves.
Well, and to your point about Jimmy Butler at the end of games, I think that Wiggins hitting these shots and playing better, just shooting, especially from three-point range, is maybe a way for him to trust him more. I think he trusts Butler, kind of trusts his guys right now, and a way for Wiggins to maybe earn that trust through the course of the season here is to hit those big shots and to be consistent, as opposed to maybe more of a guy who you can't lean on game in and game out. Him building consistency, I feel like, will be a way for him to trust Wiggins and do that consistently throughout the rest of the season.
To add on to that,
I would also Sorry, go ahead, Derek.
I was just going to say, you can't look at that Denver game and think, you know, that's a pattern. That's consistent. That was Taj Gibson that was out of the game. Jeff Teague was hurt. Cat had fouled out of the game. That was something that just had to be done. He had to take those shots to win that game. That's not 11 out of 14 in overtime. It's probably not going to happen again. I think you kind of have to set that one off to the side and say this was a one-time deal and now start looking at other games as they come down to the wire and see how we run our offense. That I just really view as more one-time extenuating circumstances sort of thing.
But we have seen Butler take over. I mean, maybe not the exact scoring numbers, but take over so much of the offensive load at the end of those games. So I'm thinking if I'm a player out there with Butler and you know that he's going to kind of be like leading the parade on offense, then say I'm putting in my effort to make a play on the defensive end. I'm putting in my effort to get the offensive rebound if Butler misses it. And I think that's something that that's a way in which Towns and Wiggins can insert themselves in those end-of-game situations, because Butler is going to be the number one option. They're going to be 2 and 3. But I think that's something that Taj Gibson does so great. When you look at his overall fourth-quarter production, he takes a step back offensive in the volume of shots he takes, but he's still getting those defensive rebounds. He's locked in on the defensive end because he knows that's how he can make an impact he can make his biggest impact in that way at the end of games. And it would be good to see a couple of the other players do a little bit of that. I see that from Tyus Jones, too, in understanding that I am not a primary option on the offensive end here, so I'm going to do the other things. And if Butler's leading the way, everyone else does the other things, that's a dangerous fourth-quarter team. And I think it's only going to get better if those guys pick up on that.
Again, another way to look at this team is they're just continually smoothing out those rough edges, and I think after the All-Star break, this is going to be a very different team than we saw in November, and even now in December, and this is a team that is continually going to improve and get better on both sides of the floor, and that's an exciting prospect. Just looking back over the week, gentlemen, starting with Darius here, just give me a grade for this week. How did you think the Timberwolves did overall throughout the week?
Give you a grade, 1 to 10, F through A. What are we looking at?
Let's go 1 through 10. School's not back in session yet.
It's not yet. That's a fair point. I don't know. I really liked the week. They won 2 out of 3. They played really good against the Lakers. They really ground one out against Denver, and then they gave up the lead against Milwaukee. But again, as we talked about, they were exhausted. It was a back to back. I like around an 8. I felt it was a good week for a growing young team.
What about you, Dane?
I'm with that, too. I think it's so important to just look at that body of work. And the Timberwolves entered that game in Milwaukee on a 5-game winning streak. Had they won that game, that would have been their first 6-game winning streak since April of 2004. That is a ridiculous amount of time. This team is finding success in ways.
How is that even possible?
I basketball reference it up. I dug through it last night.
I've heard the stat. It just feels like eventually you stumble your way into a small streak.
They've lost 722 games since the last time they were on a 6-game winning streak. That's a different era. This is a new era. We'll call it the Butler era or whatever it is. So if you're winning, you're stringing victories together. You're largely not blowing leads. How can you be upset with this? It's hard. It's an A+ or a 10+. If they win that game in Milwaukee, but the odds were stacked against them with overtime and a road back to back there. So I got nothing to complain about. Maybe injuries; those are kind of somewhat random, though. Playing a ton of minutes often affects injuries.
We're not going to get into minutes on this podcast.
I was very, very pleased. Let's go 9.64.
I like it. That's a high one. Looking at it, maybe if you add in injuries, it's kind of hard to add in because that doesn't really have to do with the production. Those are a little more random, like you're saying. Maybe 7.5, just starting point guard going out. Overall, probably like a low 8, 8.1, something like that. I did not like that. Some of those calls were bad. I still didn't like that Towns and Gibson fouled out. Not a huge fan of that. But you saw Butler pulling that team together. They won convincingly over the Lakers. And then let's not forget, this team did look just leaps and bounds better than Milwaukee for two quarters. They look not even comparable as teams. And yeah, the Milwaukee did a great job getting back into that game and eventually winning it, but for two quarters, the Timberwolves look great, and you can chalk some of that up to fatigue, some of that up to Giannis being the Greek freak, but they were the far superior team for two quarters and then kind of gave that one away. I'm going to give them credit for that one. So I would be right in there about an eight for the week, and I was overall impressed with what they did for the majority of the week. So I thought it was a good week of basketball for the Timberwolves. Definitely excited for the next week headed forward here. That's it for us here. Dane, do you have anything to plug before we head out?
Tim Fankless just wrote on zonecoverage.com about the Tyus Jones and the difference in style he plays from Jeff Teague. So I would check that out. I mean, this team is going to play different with Tyus Jones playing 40 minutes a game, as we talked about, than Jeff Teague. So as I've been driving, I haven't yet read that, but I was talking, going back and forth with Tim this morning, just kind of about some of that and the difference in time of possession that Tyus Jones has the ball in his hands when he's out there compared to Teague. So Tim digs into that a little bit. And I'm writing this weekend just kind of about if this Teague injury, I mean, I know you said earlier, Colton, that it looks like it's going to be 4 weeks, but it could span up to 6 weeks in kind of a worst case scenario. So what I'm looking at is ways outside of this roster to address that. And 10-day contracts can start coming in here on January 5th. I would be surprised if the Wolves don't sign a player to a 10-day contract there too. But also I'm going to explore some point guards that the team could take a look at to trade for, whether that's kind of a backup guy that's a better Aaron Brooks, or, you know, there's some bigger options out there too. Some teams are going to be selling at the deadline. And point guard, given this Teague injury, we don't know where he's at. It could be a position that the Wolves address at a trade deadline that I'm almost certain they're going to be active at. So
Melo Tremblay, let's go, baby. Iowa Wolves, Melo Tremblay.
No.
Let's go. The Maryland prospect.
It's Trimble.
Hey, it's Melo. It's young Melo.
Young Melo.
It's young Melo.
No hood.
No hood yet. Young Melo. Let's go, baby.
Maybe.
All right, that's all for us here. This has been Dane Moore, Judge Fudge, a.k.a. Darius Retzer, and your host, Colt Molesky. Let us know how we did on the show. Hit me up at C. Molesky on Twitter. And thanks for listening to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.